In far western Russia, there is a monastery called Optina. Before the Russian Revolution, it was renowned as a pilgrimage site where elders would offer uniquely inspired spiritual direction and wisdom. It is said that one such elder took Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount, "Don't worry about tomorrow," so seriously that he would, rather than saving the monastery's income for a rainy day through an endowment or something like that, he would distribute the income to the surrounding poor rather than let it accumulate. When times were tough, he would do the opposite of what probably most other organizations would do. He would actually start capital projects to support the local population, even if it meant that the monastery was short of bread. However, when the communists took control, the elders knew that the monastery's days were numbered. While monasteries had suffered repression before by czars and bishops afraid of their influence, communism was another animal altogether. It was and is explicitly hostile to all forms of religious belief. So during this turmoil, knowing that the future was bleak, the monastery would surely be shut down shortly, the leaders deported or killed, the elders are said to have prayed this little prayer every morning. O Lord, grant that I may meet all that this coming day brings to me with spiritual tranquility. Grant that I may fully surrender myself to thy holy will. At every hour of this day, direct and support me in all things. Whatsoever news may reach me in the course of the day, teach me to accept it with a calm soul and the firm conviction that all is subject to thy holy will. Direct my thoughts and feelings in all my words and actions. In all unexpected occurrences, do not let me forget that all is sent down from thee. Grant that I may deal straightforwardly and wisely with every member of my family, neither embarrassing nor saddening anyone. O Lord, grant me the strength to endure the fatigue of the coming day and all the events that take place during it. Direct my will and teach me to pray, to believe, to hope, to be patient, to forgive, and to love. Amen. Imagine what it would be like to stare death in the face like they did, and to pray this prayer that affirms all is subject to thy holy will, and all is sent down from thee. Can we imagine having that level of trust in God? Can we imagine being able to accept things as they happen with calm souls, as the prayer prays for? I have a hard time accepting being in a crowded Target. True story. It is humbling to hear the story of these brave souls and what they had to suffer. There are stories in the Bible that are similar. Much of the prophetic literature, particularly Jeremiah and Ezekiel, deal with loss of hope. When hope in the nation, hope in the king, hope in the temple is gone, erased. Everything that is known. And today's story from Jeremiah is no exception. The situation in our reading is utterly hopeless. Nebuchadnezzar and his army surround Jerusalem. People are dying of hunger. Disease runs rampant. It's extremely difficult to get in or out of the city. The economy has collapsed. There's little trade. In our men's Bible study, someone asked, why would they let Jeremiah have silver while he's in prison? Well, what's he going to spend it on? You know, it's this story about Hanamel offering his cousin Jeremiah the right of redemption on a piece of land is so ridiculous on the surface. He has no use for such land. Not only will he never see it, in fact, he'll be arrested trying to leave the city to get to it, he has no one to leave it to. Back in Jeremiah chapter 16, God forbade Jeremiah from marrying or having children as a sign of the coming disaster. Besides, the Babylonian armies have also rampaged through much of the countryside, so it's not like it could really be worked. Even if he could get to the land, and if it could be worked, much of the produce would go to Babylon's soldiers. The imprisoned Jeremiah has the once-in-a-lifetime offer to buy a useless piece of land using useless money that he will never work or leave title to. Yet in the purchase of this land is a sign of hope for a future not only unseen but unimaginable. God promises houses and fields and vineyards will again be bought in this land. Most of us can think of times we didn't have much hope for the future. During COVID, I visited my home congregation, and one of the members said she feared we would never see the end of the pandemic. Last year, when Abby ended up in the hospital and Tom died, I often felt like I was in a never-ending loop of waiting for the next horrible thing to happen. Some days I still feel like that. And when we're in the middle of something bad, we can wonder, will it ever end? Maybe you're in such a time right now. But today, in this reading from Jeremiah, we have a word of hope and a word of to the Gospel of John also. That word of hope doesn't fail. It can't, because it doesn't originate in this decaying realm where everything eventually passes away. It originates in God the Father, the Son, and Spirit, who loves us so much that the Son became human for you and for me. God the Son, Jesus the Messiah, suffered, died, and rose again so that we could have lasting gospel hope, not in anything of this world, not in any nation or church or anything else, but in God alone. We know there are plenty of things we could have hope in. And we know that all those things are liable to failure. Reminds me of hunter safety. Taking that firearm is a mechanical, the safety is a mechanical device and liable to failure. Everything is liable to failure in this realm. Social Security, 401ks, Medicare, Medicaid, housing values, family, nation, world, religious and civic leaders, the Minnesota Vikings. The list goes on and on, doesn't it? All these things to have hope in that are liable to failure. And I want to point out that while it's not bad to have hope in most of these things, we can never have ultimate hope in any of them. Our ultimate hope can only rest in Jesus Christ, crucified and risen for the life of the world. And that's where the invitation comes in from John's gospel. After his encounter with the Samaritan woman at the well, Jesus' disciples arrive, and they come across him talking to her, which is absolutely stunning. There are so many social conventions that Jesus is just casually breaking by doing that. After the woman leaves, they urge him to eat, to which Jesus responds, "I have food to eat that you don't know about." This isn't literal food, of course. This is Jesus referring to his mission, which is to eat, to do the will of the one who sent me and to complete his work. That work is had a lot of forerunners who have done a lot of the hard work without enjoying the fruits of their labors, at least in this life. Those forerunners include Jeremiah, who bought a piece of land that he never saw as a sign of a future restoration. And we're called, so the disciples and us are invited to complete their labors, to reap where they have sown, where our ancestors in faith have sown. Now in this age where so many feel hopeless, we're called to live out our hope in him who gives us lasting hope, in Jesus Christ, so that others can have that hope too. This hope is not dependent on anyone or anything else. It's not dependent on the stock market, the weather, or world events. It's only in Jesus Christ who who's called and claimed us to be his own. So when we feel hopeless, God help us remember where true hope, gospel hope, really lies. In Jesus Christ.